Macabre. Misfortune.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 55 of Macabre Misfortunes. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Tracy.
All right, so as you guys listen to this, we are actually in Mexico on a much needed vacation.
True dat.
This is one that was actually scheduled back for Valentine's week, and then I had my heart attack and couldn't go, so we rescheduled it for now. And with everything else going on, it just works out perfect timing, I guess. So we'll get back, and everything moving forward is back to normal. No more extra interviews during the week and stuff like that. We're back, as you heard this week. We actually had Dead Time Stories and Eerie Encounters back. These two are going to be different, though, because we're not recording a brand new episode for this. But I went back and I found an episode we did on the Jameson family back in 2018 on Patreon.
Mm-hmm.
So most people have not heard that. And that's what we're going to do here. So we're actually going to play that because it fits on this episode more than it does a regular episode. So enjoy. And next week we'll be back.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Hey, guys. And welcome to the August Patreon bonus episode. I'm Jerry.
I'm Tracy.
Aw.
Hi.
So, are you ready to do a little creepy true crime tonight?
I'm ready.
I really came to say it's true crime because we don't know that there was a crime.
Okay.
So, we'll leave it at that.
All right. Let's see what happens.
This is going to be the story of the Jameson family. And this is not too long ago. I mean, we're talking in the last 10 years.
Okay.
So, this is a kind of a creepy story. And, you know, here's the deal. Was it murder? Was it suicide? Was it something else? Nobody really knows. All I know is when the police are usually informed of a missing persons case, investigations usually follow a certain pattern. Well, with information available, they form theories about, you know, possible scenarios, what happened, and then new evidence usually come to light. Of course, we watch First 48, so we're well aware of what happens here. Scenarios are eliminated one by one. And eventually, they solve the case, in most cases anyway. In the case of the Jameson family, however, the investigation did not follow this pattern. With the Jamesons' disappearance, on the contrary, whenever new information became available, investigators found themselves even more confounded and further from the truth. And to this day, the Jamesons' case remains unsolved and one of America's strangest and most baffling mysteries.
No way.
So are you ready to hear about this mystery?
Yeah, I'm very interested.
Okay, so even though they had their weird idiosyncrasies, is that a word? Idiosyncrasies?
Yes.
No, it's eccentricities. That's what it is. Okay, either way.
It was weird.
They were a tad bit weird. On the surface, Bobby and Sherilyn Jameson were a relatively boring couple who liked to keep to themselves. So they met in the summer of 2002. They fell in love. They were married less than 2 years later. And in 2004... Sherilyn gave birth to a baby girl, Madison.
Mm-hmm.
The family lived together in Eufaula, Oklahoma, with Sherilyn's son from a previous marriage by the name of Colton, just like our grandson. Although, oddly enough, just before the disappearance, Colton had been sent off to live with his father.
Well, wonder why.
Well, I don't know. Guess we'll find out. Or not. So, life was not always easy for the Jamesons. Sherilyn had been battling with depression ever since her sister had died in a freak accident. This really is a freak accident. She was stung by a bee on her tongue.
Oh, God.
And it killed her.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't know what she was doing licking bees.
Ugh.
But.
Well, that's terrible.
Sherilyn had also been diagnosed with bipolar disorder and sometimes had been known not to take her medication.
Mm-hmm.
Bobby had problems too, though. So following a car accident that he had, he suffered from chronic debilitating back pain. So this left him unable to work. So he was drawing a disability check.
Yeah.
So the combination of constant pain and financial problems had taken a toll, and he too was struggling with his own depression. So it appears their mental health issues had begun to take, I guess, have an effect on their marriage, is a better way of putting it. Although Bobby and Sherilyn still loved each other, they were known to argue and had discussed the possibility of divorce.
That's a shame.
So the family also had an uneasy relationship with their neighbors. Some believe that Sherilyn was involved with the occult.
Well, that's a pretty big accusation.
Well, there's reasons for that, though. And we'll get into some of that a little bit later. But her best friend, Nikki Chenault, said that they both bought witches' Bibles.
Mm-hmm.
But they said they bought it as a joke. I don't know what kind of joke that would be. Ha ha.
I guess just interested in what was in it.
Hey, we bought a witch's Bible. That's funny. Anyways, so they bought the Bible. And then when her cats died from what she thought was a poisoning, she went out to, they had this, not a ship, like a pod. Like those storage pods, like mm-hmm. a container. It's like a 40-foot container. They had one of those out there. She went out there and wrote this message on the container. It said, three cats killed to date by people in this area. Witches don't like their black cat killed.
She write that on the outside or the inside?
On the outside. Where the neighbors could see it. So this family needed a fresh start, more or less, for all kinds of reasons, and we'll get into a bunch of them. But they figured to save their marriage, they would go out and buy some land in the country. Now, the funny thing is, supposedly, they were going to move this pod out there and live in the pod.
You cannot live in a pod, moron. Different movie. Never mind.
But that's what they planned on doing.
Well, I mean, I would think it would be better off if they lived in the country, not around people. They can paint whatever they want to on their little pod, so nobody has to look at it.
Well, anyway, so the Jamesons were interested in a plot of land that was for sale in the remote mountains near Red Oak. That's about 30 miles from where they lived.
Mm-hmm.
So on October 7th, 2009, Bobby, Sherilyn, and 6-year-old Madison set off in their truck to go view the land. But somehow or another, they got lost in the backcountry. They stopped to ask a man for directions. They decided to go back home, but on the next day, on October 8th, they took their truck. They drove back to the mountain, and the truck was discovered 8 days later. It became immediately apparent that something was gone.
Oh, no.
It's gone wrong. So the Jamesons were a really private family, and it was pretty common for them to actually kind of just...
disappear
not,
for a while.
Well, not necessarily disappear, but not be in touch with family or friends.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that nobody heard from them for 6, 7, 8 days was no big deal.
Right.
And the few people in the mountains who saw the truck assumed it belonged to gas or oil workers because... there were a bunch of those in the area, so mm-hmm. it's not unusual to see a vacant vehicle for a while because they're out working in the oil fields. Anyways, it was only when a couple of bikers riding bicycles, they stumbled across the car, and then they noticed that there was a dog in the car that looked like it was really distressed. So they called the police, and the police came out. It was Madison's puppy, Maisie, and that's what kind of raised the alarm to begin with. Now, the dog was extremely malnourished, so he had been in the truck for some time.
Oh, poor baby.
With no food, no water, all that. So when the police actually arrived, their concern quickly grew. At the scene right there where the truck was, there was no signs of struggles. But inside the truck, the police discovered that the family's coats, wallets, cell phones, and a GPS device. Now, keep in mind, it was chilly outside.
Mm-hmm.
So for them to leave...
all that stuff, yeah.
Well, especially their coats stuff, makes no sense. So the weather at the time this year was beginning to turn cold, obviously. And if they left the truck on their own, it didn't look like they had planned on staying outside for very long because all their coats and stuff were inside.
Right.
Now, without proper clothing, after 8 days in the mountains, their ability to survive was probably pretty slim. Now, further discoveries... were going to be coming up soon. In the truck, for example, there was an 11-page letter found written by Sherilyn to her husband, filled with hate and bitterness. In the letter, Sherilyn referred to him as a loner and a hermit and claimed she wanted a divorce. Now, suddenly, their disappearance was looking more like the hallmarks of a murder-suicide. Then another dramatic piece of evidence was uncovered. Under the seat, police discovered a bag containing $32,000 in cash.
Man.
Now, this family was known to carry large amounts of cash from time to time, but it was never that big of an amount of money, especially for a family that supposedly was experiencing financial difficulties.
Yeah.
Now, in this part of the country, there is a huge meth habit, meth problem. A lot of people buying and selling meth. So when this large amount of cash is found, you can automatically assume that drugs automatically came to mind to the police officer.
I mean, I can almost understand that, but I don't understand really why they just didn't think they just withdrew all their money and they were going to go on an adventure or something.
Probably because that's odd, just have $32,000 in a truck and everything else is missing. I mean, maybe if they just pulled them over and that was the case, but they're not going to think that when all their coats and IDs and everything's in the car and nobody's seen them for 8 days.
Yeah.
So
it was really surprising, though, that money was still in there then.
All right. Which is another key to the whole problem of what makes everything so strange. So one final rather strange piece of evidence was recovered. With their belongings, police found a prescription pill bottle with the name of an unknown man on the label.
Oh, so it wasn't the name? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Initially, its bearing on the case was undetermined, but it provided an intriguing lead to follow up on. So, here's some of the theories. From the beginning, the police had two credible theories to work with. The first was that due to depression and marital problems, Sherilyn had taken her husband and daughter into the woods where she had killed them before taking her own life. It was known that Sherilyn owned a .22 caliber pistol.
Oh.
And that she always carried in her truck, but the police were unable to locate this weapon either in the vehicle or at the family's home. So the gun was missing.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that they found the letter also kind of supported this theory, but Nikki Chenault, which I said was her best friend, she argued against this. She said the letter was simply just a form of therapy for Sherilyn, and she never intended for Bobby to ever read it.
So she was writing like journaling or something.
Then there was the cash. How'd that big bag of money tie in with a murder-suicide? So that really doesn't make sense either. You know, if it's going to be a murder-suicide, why do you got a big bag of cash with you? So the other theory was the drugs angle. Now, perhaps there was a drug deal that went wrong. The unexplained bag of cash certainly hinted at a drugs connection. Family and friends had also noticed that Bobby and Sherilyn had recently lost a lot of weight and looking noticeably, just strange.
Mm-hmm.
There was like a big difference in their appearance. And that would usually be a possible indication of drug use. However, no other telltale signs had ever been remarked. And when police searched their home, they found no evidence of drug use. It's unlikely that somebody who had been using meth would have, you know, no kind of drug paraphernalia or other indications in their home.
Yeah, you would think they'd have something in
there. So another element of the drugs theory failed to explain why the money was left in the truck. If their disappearance had been connected to a drug deal, and they had potentially been murdered, surely the murderer would have not left such a large amount of cash in the truck. It could be argued that the would-be murderer may have been unaware of the cash, but anybody that, you know, is about to be killed would almost certainly reveal the presence of money in a desperate attempt to, you know, bargain for their life, I guess.
Yeah.
Then you've got the picture. There's a picture of the little girl standing outside by some rocks. She's got no jacket on. She's got a look on her face like something's wrong. And while both of these theories seem somewhat plausible, neither explained all the facts. And 300 volunteers looked all over the countryside for this family. Another unsettling piece of evidence came to light. Using the GPS signal from the Jamesons' cell phones, the police attempted to kind of trace their movements. So the Jamesons had parked the truck where it was found, and from there, for some odd reason, they made their way up to a nearby hill to a rock. Then, they stopped at the rock for about 15 or 20 minutes before returning to the truck. On the telephone, the police discovered a disturbing photograph of Madison standing alone by the rock, her arms were crossed. Apparently, she was in some kind of distress, perhaps maybe afraid, arguably on the verge of tears, and seemingly very cold. Family members have described Madison as a very smiling child who loved to have her photograph taken and say that the image was highly unusual for her. Others have argued that it was simply just a photograph that was captured, her face in a movement that made it look like it was something else other than what it really was. Either way, it certainly does not look like the memento that a happy child out enjoying a day with her parents would have, and the image only complicated matters further for the police. Because who took the photo? Why did Madison look so upset? Why did her parents even take her up on the hill in the first place on a cold October day without any warm clothes? And even more concerning, were her parents even with her when this photo was taken? So ultimately, the discovery served more of a complication to the investigation than shed any light on
anything. Right, just made it worse, yeah.
So then the search continued. Hundreds of volunteers were on foot and on horseback, as well as scent hounds, cadaver dogs, but no further trace of the family was found. In the meantime, the investigation continued and more clues were revealed. See, the Jamesons had installed closed-circuit TV surveillance cameras at their home. And when the police watched the recording, they found this very puzzling. Because in the video, Bobby and Sherilyn can be seen loading into their truck before driving up to the mountains. They both made about 6 trips back and forth to the car, seemingly in a trance-like state.
What, you mean they didn't talk to each other or nothing? Yeah.
They didn't once stop. They didn't speak. And it was suggested that this confirms the theory that they were on drugs because their repetitive actions, some see as the classic signs of meth use.
Wow. But they never saw Madison at all on that helping? Or
they didn't mention. But however, it could also be argued that the act of loading the truck for a trip was not necessarily required them to talk very much to each other, and that nothing could be inferred by these mm-hmm. images from the cameras. Mm-hmm. So the video also revealed one peculiar detail. At one point, Sherilyn's loading a brown satchel or a briefcase of some sort into the truck. When the truck was discovered more than a week later, the item was not found. So there's speculation over the possible contents of this bag, with some thinking that it contained more money, another piece of the evidence that could support the drug deal theory. As the police investigation continued, other theories were suggested. So that brings us to the pill bottle that was found in the car. Remember, we were talking about the pill bottle.
Mm-hmm.
This was actually a guy that was living there on the property. And as it turned out, Sherilyn, who had Native American heritage, drove this guy off her property with her gun, pretty much because he said that he thought that all non-white people needed to die. And with her being Native American heritage, I guess she took offense to that. So this was made this guy a suspect, but he apparently had a really solid alibi, so the FBI just kind of
run that then,
dismissed
I guess.
It. Now, we talked about Sherilyn's interest in the occult a little bit earlier. The family's pastor informed police that the Jamesons had reported seeing ghosts in her house.
No.
Bobby claimed to have seen spirits on the roof, and on one occasion, he asked the priest where he could buy special bullets to which he could shoot these apparitions with. So perhaps this points to a disturbed family in need of some psychiatric help, or maybe this erratic behavior is further evidence of drug use.
Mm-hmm.
Some might even believe that a supernatural element was indeed involved in her disappearance, but in any case, the connection with the occult and the supernatural is another of the many facts that may or may not have even been related to this disappearance.
This is very strange.
It gets stranger. So we talked about them having the fact that they had these closed-circuit TV surveillance cameras mm-hmm. put up. Now, here's why. Bobby's dad owned a gas station, and him and Bobby did not get along.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of this stemmed from the gas station Bobby would go work at for free for his dad in exchange for when they sold the gas station, he was going to get half the money.
Okay.
Well, this didn't happen.
Oh, that duped him?
Not only did he sell the gas station and dupe him, but he also hit Bobby with his car.
What?
Yeah, like as a pedestrian deal, hit him with his car. So they went down and filed, protective orders against his dad. Basically restraining orders and stuff like that. The judge threw it out.
Why?
He said that there wasn't enough to warrant
Okay, so he hit you with the car, and that's not enough to warrant. What an idiot.
That's what he said. And Bobby had claimed that his father was a dangerous man with connections to Mexican mafia, prostitution, and drugs, and as some believe that his father was the reason for their disappearance.
Well, that's a good father figure for you, though, right?
You would think. Now, Cheryl Lynn's mother, she claimed to have seen the Jamesons on the hit list of a white supremacist group known as the United White Knights.
Oh, my gosh.
So the mountains where they disappeared at were known as a hotbed for far-right extremists, we'll say. And near where the Jamesons' truck was found, there's a wrecked car that had been covered in racist slogans. Cheryl Lynn had supposedly written over top of them with religious messages of peace and love. So while white supremacists were known to be active in the area, no concrete proof has ever been produced to support the theory that they were somehow involved
in it.
In this missing. So in the absence of bodies or a convincing explanation, some claim that the Jamesons had faked their own deaths to disappear and start a new life somewhere else. While that's plausible, this theory didn't really explain the bag of cash found in the truck.
That's what they were going to use to start their new life.
True. But a similar theory was that they had been placed in a witness protection program in an area that's full of meth production. It was conceivable that they had passed information to the police and were subsequently given new identities for their safety. It was known that Bobby had recently informed on a meth dealer. Though again, this...
You mean snitched?
Yeah, he snitched.
Is that what we meant? Okay.
Absolutely. So the investigation had reached a point where there was no new evidence, nothing was forthcoming, and the case remained further than ever from being solved. So the police had discovered a wealth of information about the Jamesons, but this desperate collection of facts served only to serve the case even further.
This is messed up.
The police were unable to eliminate any of their theories. So to solve the case, police needed evidence that the Jamesons were still alive. Otherwise, they needed to find the bodies, and they weren't finding anything.
You don't think they were in on it, do you?
Who?
The police.
No. November 15th, 2013, 4 years after their disappearance, hunters stumbled across human remains in the forest less than 3 miles from where the Jamesons' truck was found.
Aww.
They appeared to belong to 2 adults and 1 child, but the remains were in such poor state of preservation that it was more than 6 months before they could be identified. On the 3rd of July, 2014, the remains were confirmed as being those of the Jamison family. No tissue was left, and the skeletal remains were only partial, showing significant scavenger and rodent activity.
Oh my gosh.
Despite this, the bodies appeared to have been arranged side by side and face down. The skulls were present, but although a small hole was found in Bobby's skull, that could have been caused by a bullet. The degradation was such that the medical examiner was unable to record a definitive cause of death.
But yeah, if he got shot in the skull, they would have found the bullet.
Not necessarily.
Why?
Because it would have fell out. I mean, just because it's skull's empty when it's just a skull.
Well, I know. You think it would just be laying there, though, in the skull.
Yeah, but animals could have carried it off, just like the rest of their bones weren't all there.
That's a really sad story.
For 4 years, all those involved in the case had stopped and hoped that the bodies would be found, and it might finally reveal what happened to the family. At least the Jamesons' loved ones would be able to have some kind of a closure. Yet, while the theories of fake death or witness protection could now be eliminated, all the other possibilities remained. And indeed, more questions were raised. In the initial search, why had the bodies not been found if they had been so near the truck? I mean, they were in a 3-mile radius. A lot of times, they'll search a 5-mile radius and be pretty accurate. In fact, while the distance from the truck was less than 3 miles in a straight line on foot, it would be closer to 7. So then how did they find themselves so deep in the woods and why?
Yeah.
I mean, you got to remember, Bobby had problems walking and stuff.
Yeah,
and his thing.
Yeah.
So it's not like they're going to be up for a hike.
Right.
And if they're going to go that far away, why wouldn't they have, you know, warmer clothes on and stuff like that?
Yeah. Man, so that's sad story.
If the answer was murder-suicide, how did they die? No weapon was ever found near the bodies, and that doesn't really... seem to be, I mean, I guess it could be poisoning or something like that. But if it was a murder-suicide, why had they traveled so far from the truck to end their lives? Mm-hmm. Why couldn't they just go, you know, 20 feet away?
And why'd they leave the dog in the car?
That's another good question. If they killed themselves, how is it that they were found lying face down and side by side?
Yeah, that's not possible.
If it had been a murder, again, why were the bodies found so deep in the woods, and how did they arrive there? Had they been marched there at gunpoint, or had they been carried there after they were killed? 7 miles is a long way to carry a body through a thick forest, mm-hmm. and this would imply that more than one murderer was almost certainly involved. And what had happened at the rock when Madison was photographed?
Man, that's so weird. It just, I mean, the only thing I could think of was that he took the picture, or they took the picture of Madison. And maybe it's like you said, maybe they did some kind of poison or something. Like, he poisoned them, and then whatever they did, he did to them, he did to himself, and he just laid down and just died beside them. And he placed them in that, way.
The fact that they were found lined up and face down might suggest an execution-style murder. If so, was it premeditated? Who knew that they would be at this spot in the remote mountains at that time? What was the motive? Or perhaps they had simply stumbled upon something they shouldn't have seen and needed to be silenced. But if that was the case, once again, why were they taken so deep into the woods? Some have just suggested that they were murdered in a ritual-style killing by Satan worshippers. If this is true, perhaps asking logical questions about how they died and where they were found is meaningless. Some think they just wandered off and became lost in the woods, although those who knew them point out that Bobby was an excellent woodsman, so this was highly unlikely. Perhaps they lost themselves in the woods because they were high on meth. And so on. The speculation's endless. The truth is, at this point, it's unknown what happened to the Jamesons on October 8, 2009, unless somebody who knows the truth comes forward, that's how it will remain. An unsolved mystery with limitless theories, but very few answers.
I'm sure they didn't want to go out like that, but it just really sucks, though, because there is no closure.
Well, and then here's some other stuff. Like, we talk about, let's go back to the paranormal aspect of it. They talk to a priest. Mm-hmm. You know, you see them walking in a trance back and forth on the one thing. They've went to a priest about saying they've seen spirits in their house and wanting to buy special bullets. All that seems funny. And then you've got this Bible. Now, he told the priest that he had been reading a satanic Bible, which was this witch book that they had in the house. So, I mean, all this is just really strange. Not to say that that's exactly what's going on, but they actually believe there's something there. You don't buy witch books and bring them home.
Well, no, you don't just as a do joke, that. Right?
You're
right.
Not going to write on your trailer outside or your pod, you know, about killing a witch's black cat. That's not a joke thing.
Right?
That's something more than that that's going on. But yeah, this is it's very strange. So I can understand the fact that. Keep in mind, they were going out to look at this plot of land. Now, maybe they were going to use that money to buy the land.
That could be true.
Maybe they were going to pay. So, and I never saw that theory listed in anything that I looked up. Mm-hmm. But that would seem logic to me. They were going to go look for this land. Why wouldn't you take the money to buy it if you like it?
Right.
I don't know. It's a very strange case. And here's something else that got brought up. Like I said, nobody found the body when they were doing the initial search. But yet somebody stumbles across it. Those bodies were out there for a long time. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of missing parts to the body. So animals had taken probably like femur bones and arm bones and carried them off. And
oh, gosh. That's just really horrible to think about.
So I don't know. I don't know what to even think about this situation. But it's. Yeah. I thought it was
only
a very...
Only God knows, so...
I thought it was a very interesting story.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, apparently their neighbors, they got into it with their neighbors all the time, and mm-hmm. There was a lot of situations where I know Bobby's dad that supposedly had it in for him, but Bobby's mother, she also agreed that she thought that he could have probably been the one to do it.
His dad.
She didn't find that very hard to believe that he would be. It's like everybody had a story. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, for example, we talk about the white supremacist thing. Now, her best friend that we were talking about, the one with the witch book, she said that the day before they went missing, or a couple of days before, I'm going on memory, I don't have my notes here, but she said that she got a strange anonymous phone call that was asking, did she know Cheryl Lynn? And was she this? And when she's that? And she's saying it was from the white supremacist group. And then all of a sudden they end up missing. But I mean,
how does she know that?
I don't know. But there's so much speculation on this.
I'm sure we'll never know.
Probably not.
I can't believe he had such a mean daddy. That's terrible.
So yeah, this guy. I mean, they had all kinds of issues. They come across sounding really good in this, but I mean, they fought all the time. He apparently, I think, had been messing around on her. That was part of what her aggravation was. This whole letter was 11 pages of hate, mm-hmm. and a missing gun. If it ever gets figured out, I think it probably was a murder-suicide.
Yeah.
Now, why you got to include the little girl in that, I don't know.
Yeah, that makes no sense. And why you included the little girl but left the puppy? I mean,
Why would you do that? Why would you bring your dog with you? That's a good question. I'm glad you brought that up because that was another question people had. They were like, well, maybe somebody... Why would they get out on their own and go out in the woods and do something and take the dog along?
Right.
It doesn't make any sense. It almost is like somebody forced them out of the vehicle. You know, and if it was a drug deal, why would you bring your daughter to a drug deal?
Yeah. Why would you do that?
So there's a lot of different...
Well, but apparently they didn't have friends or neighbors, or they could have said, oh, can you watch Madison while we do this? I mean, when you can't get along with anybody, then it makes it hard on themselves. And... Fortunately, that poor little girl had to suffer through all that.
So, I don't know. It's so many different twists and turns. Like I said, you know, they got the security cameras installed supposedly because of mm-hmm. the fear of his dad and what he might do. And he flat told the police he was afraid for his life.
Oh, can you imagine saying that? I'm afraid my daddy's going to kill me.
He probably didn't say it like that.
Well, I know, but I just can't even imagine that.
And then there was people saying that $32,000 could have been his settlement from the lawsuit from where he had the car accident. But then his family members, his mom and her mom, were saying that they weren't aware of them getting any settlement for mm-hmm. that yet. So, mm-hmm. And I'm sure that would be easy enough to find out, though.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're in law enforcement, you can find out about lawsuits and stuff like that.
I guess it depends on how far you want to try to go with it.
So, anyways.
Sad story.
It is a sad story. It had a little bit of paranormal in it, mm-hmm. possibly.
Had a lot of ninja snoring.
Had a hell of a lot of ninja snoring.
You must be extra tired today.
Maybe so. So anyway, I wanted to throw in another little quick story in here, and we'll finish this one up. Now, Tracy, I know you are familiar with the song Hang Down Your Head, Tom Dooley.
Yeah, I am, actually.
Because you're old as dirt. No, that's not it?
Could be halfway that, but not entirely.
So I'm going to tell you the legend of Tom Dooley and where the song came from.
Okay.
So in 1866, a woman by the name of Laura Foster was murdered in Wilkes County, North Carolina. Of course, we're going back to North Carolina. A man named Tom Dula, pronounced Dooley, but it's D-U-L-A is how it's mm-hmm. spelled, but it's pronounced Dooley, was convicted and hanged for the crime. The murder and the name Tom Dooley live on in the most famous folk songs ever come out of North Carolina. The traditional version of the story casts Tom Dooley as a dashing, handsome Confederate veteran. When Dooley returns from the war, he meets Laura Foster, a young woman who's been courted by a schoolteacher from the North by the name of Bob Grayson. Foster fell in love with Tom Dooley, but so did another woman, Ann Melton. Melton was married, wealthy, beautiful, and insanely jealous. Learning that Dooley was in love with Foster, not her, and Melton stabbed Laura Foster to death in a jealous rage. Oh, how sweet.
Well, be dang, man.
I mean, that shows love. That's true love.
That's hatred.
So Tom Dooley was blamed for the murder. Dooley fled, heading to Tennessee. Bob Grayson headed up a posse to hunt down Tom Dooley, and the posse dragged the fugitive back to Wilkes County. Dooley realized that it was Ann Melton who had committed the crime. Tom Dooley's sense of chivalry made him unwilling to see a wealthy woman dishonored and facing a death and hanging. So, Dooley confessed to the murder. That he did not commit in order to save Melton's reputation. On May 1st, 1868, Tom Dooley was executed for the murder of Laura Foster. Grayson returned home to North Carolina, and Melton went slowly insane from guilt. And years later, as she was on her deathbed, the trees around her house filled with the black cats, and the air was filled with the smell of burning flesh as demons came to take her soul to hell.
Aww.
It's this version of the tale, a very complicated story, that ends in the death of an innocent man that became immortalized in folk songs and circulated in North Carolina for nearly 100 years before it was made nationally famous by the Kingston Trio in 1958. In a way, which kind of shows how much the ways in we define music categories has changed in the past half century. The Kingston Trio, recording of the Ballad of Tom Dooley, reached number one on the Billboard R&B charts, even higher than its near placement on the Billboard's country charts.
I can't believe he did that. He did that and she still went to hell.
Well, that's what should have happened.
I know, but...
You don't get to be resolved of your sins because somebody else takes the rap for you.
Well, no, I just think that's sad that he had to die because of that.
Now, it's said that Tom Dooley wrote this song himself.
Hang down your head, Tom Dooley.
The legend has it that he was singing it, strumming it along on his banjo, and he sat on top of his own coffin, riding in the wagon on the way to his execution.
He even serenaded himself while he's going to the grave?
I don't think that's called serenading yourself.
Well, that is a gentleman.
He was quite the man.
Or dumb butt.
Yeah, either way. So.
Well,
anyways, guys,
I have more respect for that song. I had no clue that's what that was even about.
I thought it'd be a good way to cap this one off.
Yeah.
So. Guys, thank you so much for your patronage. We love you to death.
We do love you.
I said to death because it was true crime. So
oh, well, I just love you full of my heart.
Whatever. Anyways.
I won. You did.
We'll talk to you soon.
Bye.